succession number 28879, reel 7.
One little girl grow and they'll scoot off. I always remember those yeah. little girls, you know.
And those people that hid you, the ladies that hid you up in the by the villa there.
Oh yes.
And they took an enormous risk, didn't they?
Yeah, well, they, as I said, the mother was. In fact, Grandma already said the other day, she rang last night, no, Sunday night.
Right.
And she brought up a few other things at one time, you know, and she said, she mentioned about her diary. It's, I saw her diary when Nellie and I went to visit her in London.
Mm, mm.
And she said, do you remember when Mother came down saying that the Germans were going to search the house and you'd have to hide your diary? And she actually scampered off to pick the diary up and hide it. And she hid it somewhere in the woods. I forget where now, though. But anyway, they had a nasty time, really. But,
Why do you think they helped you? Did they take the Germans?
It came about from that first.
But because you spoke Italian, you were able to.
Yeah, that's one of the reasons. I think,
make
yeah.
friends with them and.
Oh, here we are. All this is. We finished off in Italy, didn't we?
We did. We finished off just where the... You've seen
all that, haven't you? All the,
you were reunited with the British Army, eventually.
This is recent correspondence from since we found Fiamma again, since they found us again.
Yeah.
That's when Nellie and I went to see her at a villa in, at a house in...
where is it? What's the name of the town?
Pardon?
What's the name of the nearest town?
Ealing, London.
Yeah, but in Italy, where exactly?
Oh, Savigliano is a little town, very ancient town. It goes back years. It still celebrates medieval history and things like that.
Right. Whereabouts? It's sort of about halfway up.
Centre of Italy, centre. Yeah, up the river. That's me playing the mouth organ, as I used to do there. I won't go through all of it, but just some of the... that's Fiamma with Paola, her sister. She's been one of the girls there. She died now.
Uh-huh. Is that what they called you, Billy?
Yes, yeah, but some of the photographs they sent. But,
that was cold in the winter, wasn't it?
Oh, that's her daughter. Yeah, what cold? When we had to leave and go up on the hill, it was pretty bad, you know, then. Had to live in caves then for a while.
Did you ever do some coat or?
A uniform all the time.
You just stayed in uniform?
I never got out of the uniform. They washed it and had a game for me.
Right.
For us, you know.
Why was that? You didn't want to get captured in civvies?
Well, not much. I just wanted to stay in. I didn't bother about the trading civvies. The only thing I did have was one of her cousins came up one day. That's Pino San Giovanni.
Mm-hmm.
That's from the field outside outside the villa. This is today, this is. This is,
right.
This is all grass at one time. And it says,
Pen San Giovanni.
From the Pinetto, that's from the little pine wood that was there.
Hmm.
The villa was just here, that's... Yeah, the villa was just over there.
Right.
You can read it from there, but... The photograph doesn't do it justice, it's marvellous right there.
Yeah.
Now, what was this one? Now, that's the villa there.
Gorgeous.
And the church.
Yeah, I've been down to Florence and Siena and Urbino and Assisi.
This is where the Jerrys came up this road here.
Right.
And in the villa, that's the contadini or the peasant house there.
Are these sort
and
of...
This is where the motorcyclists came out, round about
right, there. Right, he stayed behind to make sure...
And our hiding place is in behind the trees there. This is...
Gosh.
The Domenica. From the bell. There's a little church there where the bell. Someone they cut the on Sundays.
Yes.
Call them the contadini. That's peasants.
Mm-hmm.
For mass. Weneva Anke Paddy. That was Paddy. He was a Catholic.
Paddy used to go to church sometimes, didn't he?
And he used to read the Latin at times, you know, the prayers.
Did the priest know he was there?
Well, the priest knew he was there. He was in uniform too, Paddy. This was the only day to see the first of all. Paddy served the Mass.
In Latin.
He could speak very good Latin then. And Filippo, that's the one I was photographed with, he rang the bell.
Did you keep your religion going?
Well, only the Church of I was telling you about the medieval celebrations there.
Yeah.
So they were on the Grand Festa con Vestiti in Costumi of the 500.
Mm-hmm.
The year 500. You know, that's how far they go back. So they were dressed in...
all the flags.
Half century after. No, 500 years, isn't it?
Yeah. No, they have a real sense of their history, don't they, in Italy?
And that's where we came through here, from the prison camp. The station was here, the little station, roughly.
Mm-hmm.
We'd come across the square through there, and the little girls were singing out to us from here, and then we're back behind to the post office. This is just an example, you know. That's another, where was that again? La Pineta, that's the pine wood.
Right.
And behind there is the...
What was Paddy's? What unit was he from?
Artilleryman.
Artilleryman,
yeah,
was he?
Yeah. Playing artillery on
Paddy, huh? Did he go on back to the artillery afterwards?
I don't even know how we met him, really, because he was in the prison camp.
Yeah.
And he was in the same bungalow, you know. This was when we went to Fiamma's birthday, when Nelly and I went to Solino on the Adriatic, where her villa was, you know.
Mm-hmm.
It was her birthday, and then she took us up to Luca afterwards.
They were quite a wealthy family, were they?
Well, they are, in the sense, I don't think they were in the sense of millionaires and that sort of thing, but they were influential, too. They were all lawyers. And
an old said, family, you know, notaries.
Quite recently, one of the brothers of the Filippo is still a judge in Bologna.
Is he?
Yeah.
Bonjour.
That Easter, they celebrated Easter as well.
Yeah.
Oh, that's a bit. Birthday, happy birthday.
This is 1943, isn't it? Yeah.
Now that's the that's our garden there.
So how did you come to know that the line had moved and the Allies were coming up again?
We didn't really know at all, because we did know in one sense, because some paratroopers were dropped off in various places.
Right,
and they were spreading the news of where the because they were so late, they were spreading the news. So I didn't see any myself, but we got the news backhanded from them. So, and that's when I went down. Filippo took me down to Fermo, and Porto San Giorgio, and I went to see the Revolt Major, the Red Caps, that is, you know.
Right, military place.
And I was all dressed ragged and everything else, but he took a notice of that. You know, I just said there are about 40 or 50 prisoners surrounding around about Savigliano. I said. Waiting now for transport. I'm waiting, wanting to know what to do. So he told me, he said, I've just had information. He said a boat will be coming into the harbour in about a week to pick up any prisoners who are here. So Filippo and I went back, and they organised a lot of lorries, and the civilians did, and horse-drawn carriages and things, and took most of us down to... back down to Fermo. That's when I had to say goodbye to them, then, I guess.
You think most of them were glad to see the back of Mussolini?
Oh, they never liked him at all, no. There were one or two fascists in the village. They didn't have much to do. they were all right, you know. I mean, they treated us all right, but they were for Mussolini.
Right.
And, of course, they were getting a bit shaky with the troops coming up. And
I think they were.
They started to change face and everything else. But
yeah.
I think they loved them.
Lovely.
It's higher than that, really, but it's going to ruin now, so Fermo says, and constant earth tremors and things like that.
I shouldn't think that's a cheap place to run,
that's
is it?
That's the garage door where the other photograph was, remember?
Yeah.
So, that's, I forget what that one was. Was it in London? Or, that was in London, that was. Yeah, that when you first went to London. That was outside the villa. That's Fiona, that's with her niece. That's Paola. Paola was living in the... Her mother left the house, this is the villa,
right.
To Paola.
Right.
And Fiona was left with Lena.
Uh-huh. You obviously made quite an impression, Bill.
Yes, well, it was wartime, you know, that sort of thing. There's the Pinetto again, and that's the villa is just behind there.
So you had quite a good view from up there. Yeah, you could see any German patrols.
We lived on the river there for a while, Paddy and I.
Right.
On beans and walnuts and cherries and things. You know.
You lost contact with Paddy, did you?
Yes, and as soon as we got back to on the prisoner warship, I just lost contact with him. I don't know where he went, but.
I was hoping he was all right.
That's the villa garden again. Well, everything has changed, but the cedars are always there, mm-hmm. Always the same. Yeah.
Where did you learn the Italian? They taught you. The army had taught you.
Well, the army more or less, but most of it was taught by this Greek, Leon Diadis.
Right.
He was another one that a bit of a linguist as well, you know.
Yeah.
And we had our little papers and exam papers and things. He helped me with them all, but mostly with the accent.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the words themselves. And of course, I had a good memory. I was lucky there. So. Yeah, I don't think it's much more now. That's one of Fiamma's sons. Paolo.
Was it an army education corps? That...
No, we did afterwards, yeah. They taught it afterwards, yeah.
Mm.
That's why I took this course in at Mount Carmel College, because I was reasonably well up in Italian, you know.
Mm.
So a lot came out of it. Now, that's the end. That was during the war, that was the Belvedere. There was a seat there. Mm. And that's where we used to meet and talk, the girls and Paddy and me.
Right.
And that's Pino San Giovanni, but you can't see it very well. You know? It's all roped off. It's a quite steep cliff there.
Quite a steep valley.
Paddy and I came up to the villa one night from the river just to have a look around more or less and see everything was all right, you know.
Yeah.
I think the girls had all gone down to the coast, you see.
Mm-hmm.
And we climbed up there. We got to the road there and we heard this... we're just going to cross the road and we heard this curious sort of rumble. So we waited for a bit and the rumble went on, then suddenly it stopped and then the voice said, "Hoot, hoot," and the hope went all the way back about half a mile nearly, all saying "Hoot." And we stayed there, we didn't dare move after that, we stayed there hidden under the bushes, and after a while these horses came by drawing wagons and all sorts. Right. The German drivers, German
column.
And they had to stop now and again for some reason, any reason, and then the front one would shout "Hoot," and it would go all the way back. It's dark, you see, it was very dark, and they had to, because during the day, the American aircraft came over.
Yeah.
That camera and the girls were all together one day with us on one of the farms.
Right.
And this aircraft came straight over, opened up on the road, and pooped up again, frightened the life out of them, you know.
Yeah.
Because we were used to it. But
yes.
I don't know if you've seen that one, but there's a lot more I can sort out, you know, but that gives you a rough idea of what it's like.
It's great.
What the country was like now. There's some more around somewhere, but I'll find them after a while.
So eventually you boarded this boat out of the harbour at...
Yeah, and they took us down to...
Where's the harbour?
Porto San Giorgio, at the end of the river, the bottom of the river.
Uh-huh. And Porto then San Giorgio.
They took us down to Brindisi.
Right.
And Brindisi, they just unloaded us and said, pick up some transport and make your way to Naples. And right across the bottom of Italy. Well, the first, of course, they were all unloaded. There were about 50 or 60 of us there.
Uh-huh.
And the first thing we met with was these huge American trucks driven by Negroes.
Right. The six-wheeler.
They stopped and said, "Where are you going, bud?" That sort of thing. So we want to get to Naples. So he says, "I'll take you to the aerodrome, that's Ortuno, about the middle of, halfway between Naples and where we were." And it was an American aerodrome there, you know.
Uh-huh.
And when we got there, because I know the solution to them little ones. They'd just been raided, and a lot of little Italian boys were wounded. And they were sitting outside the waiting room. They're badly wounded, some of them were.
Uh-huh.
But the American troops were being treated first, more or less.
Yes.
And these were wounded because they come around the dustbins, scraping for food.
Yeah.
From Ortona itself, you know, from the town. They had very little food. And that's what they did everywhere, even in Naples, everywhere we went.
Yeah.
They'd come around the army camps.
Yeah.
Scraping the dustbins for food, and there's plenty of it, because there's a lot of waste from the...
Well, they got hit in the air, right?
But they were generous as well. You know, the Americans, they give them ice cream, chewing gum, chocolate, and all sorts.
Yeah.
But at that time, the troops, of course, had gone well up, and everything was set, more or less. Italy had more or less given in, and
yeah.
The Germans were on the run, and everyone was pretty happy, you know? So,
yeah.
So the Yanks were pretty free with their food and everything. But even so, as I said, they still went around the dustbins, and they got hit with the bomb, these four of them, I think it was. But they got over it all right.
So what did you do from there, from the airfield?
And then we went to, we caught lorries again, they gave us lorries, the Yanks did. They didn't even know us. All they knew was we were returning prisoners, ex-prisoners, and we had to get to Naples, and they just took us there. When we got to Naples itself, the organisation was already there, right on the harbour,
mm-hmm.
receiving British ex-prisoners. We mm-hmm. went straight through, gave our reports of where we were captured and that sort of thing. And
we got a debriefing, like an interview.
Yeah, and then mine was quite, I didn't realise at the time, but my information was pretty useful because they tried to capture it afterwards by putting the Italians against the Germans and that sort of thing. A couple of our men went in there and tried to influence them, but there was no go. So it was still in German hands at the end of the war, road wars, you see.
Right.
But I didn't know whether they were still attacking or no. Anyway, that was all done. Then we put on a boat and brought home to Liverpool.
Oh, from Naples?
From Naples, yeah.
And was that the first time you'd been home since 1939?
40.
Right, yeah.
40, well, no, I hadn't been home. I only went home on Christmas leave, that was all, 1940.
So it's 3 years.
And then the 40 we went, yeah, went abroad. Yeah. Or 41, and that was, well, more than that, wasn't it? Yeah, 45 when I got home.
Right.
So, quite a while.
So how long did you came back to Liverpool?
So I was away from home, from 1939, except for the one visit, you know.
Yeah.
So we came back from Liverpool, and then we were sent to Aberystwyth in Wales,
right.
Where they sorted out the different regiments, and they were confused with us, the Tories. They said we heard of you. I said, but you're not a regular unit. You're just what they call it. I forget what they called them then.
Irregular.
Unofficial.
Unofficial.
You're not even down anywhere. You know, you haven't got a base or anything like that. And of course, when we said SBS or SAS, anything like that, they didn't say. When we said commandos, that's better. They said, because we've all known as commandos, the SAS as well. We see by the German. So they said, you can go back to. The commando base depot. There's a commando base depot at what's the name of the place? Somewhere in North Wales now. I forget on the border. So I went back there, and they said, "What commando were you from?" I said, "Well, originally number 3 commando." I said, and they went to number 8, and then number 11, and then SBS, all sorts. So they said, "Well, we'll send you back to number 3. The number 3 commando is." On their way back, will be on their way back. They're home from Germany, and they're reorganising and going to Japan. Well, in the meantime, I did forget to tell you when I got to Aberystwyth, they sent us to when I got to the commando depot at wherever it was now, they sent me to North Wales for recuperation, for sort of a rest because you've been a prisoner and been wounded. Well, I've been wounded, you see.
Yeah.
Or the wounded healed by then. He won everything, but I went up there and I was there for about a month. That was all right. And then they went back to number 3 commando at
what was that, just sort of
Worthing.
Just like a rest centre, you just took it easy for a month.
Nothing to do at all. We just reported in the morning, you know. And we were billeted out, and we could walk around and do what we wanted, more or less.
This is into 1944 now, is it?
No, 45. Yeah, 45
into 45? Right.
And then I went to... While I was there, my time was up. Because, as you know, I was called up in 1939 with the 1st Militia.
Yeah.
My time was up, but I'd volunteer for another 2 years because... The commando was going to abroad, you see.
Three commando was.
Yeah, three. So when I joined them, I was there for about a fortnight, getting everything ready, topical kit and everything else, and the Jap War ended.
It all ended.
I did it. So,
and you'd already signed up for another 2 years then.
So then Chris, a mate who was with me, we just volunteered for the, they say, was the best place to go, you know, to see some action still. And the CO said, well, he said, the parachute regiment, 6th Airborne, they're on their way to Palestine now. You can transfer to those. So we transferred the 6th Airborne and went straight to Palestine. And then there wasn't very much activity then for a little while until the terrorists started up. And then, of course...
there were Jews flooding into Palestine at this time.
Peacetime accounting came in with the Labour government and everything else. And they started to organise our free time and things like that. And I went to Mount Carmel then.
So did you stay back at your mum and dad's house when you came back down to Plymouth?
No, I still...
stayed in barracks?
I was still at... still away. I went home a couple of times, but I was still at Aberystwyth and Port Madoc. That's where we went for the...
Port Madoc?
Recreation and things, and they what do they call it now?
So when, just taking it back, when did you come back to Liverpool?
To Liverpool?
Hmm.
Well, I forget the exact dates now. Let's see.
Well, it took quite a while. You were a prisoner for about 3 or 4 months, weren't you?
No, I was a prisoner for 8 months.
Right? 8 months.
The time I got back from not including roads, that is.
Yeah.
Going through. And then when we got out, we were on the run there for about 6 months or so.
6 months?
Yeah. Well, it must be getting on that way, yeah, because...
Wow.
We got out at Christmas, and it was May, just after May, when the rains had stopped and the troops had arrived, about June or July, so... It was summer, that's right. It was July or August when we got back to Liverpool.
From 44.
That must have been
44. Just before 44. D-Day. Just before Normandy.
That's right. We missed everything there. But I'm glad I didn't miss it anyway after that. You know,
had you had enough by then?
No, I hadn't had enough. I volunteered for another 2 years. They wanted more volunteers, you see, to carry on. But there were so many troops leaving for the...
What did it feel like when Germany was finally beaten?
Well, I felt quite relieved myself, you know. I thought, well, no more, because there were times when you were scared and worried about various things, you know.
Of course.
But, I was quite relieved it was all over and got away with it, so to speak, you know. So.
Yeah. Did you know about the bombs, the Nagasaki and Hiroshima bombs?
Oh, we heard about that a while, yes, straight away, you know. Mm.
Right.
We had the old doodle bugs coming over as well, you know, and that's what worried us for a while, the doodle bugs and the V-2 rockets and things coming over. They dropped occasionally nearby. But
was that a shock when you came back to Plymouth and England and you came into Liverpool? I mean, you must have seen the you know, the devastation.
I can't remember a lot about Liverpool, but we weren't there very long. We were just sorted out and then sent off to... Aberystwyth, you know, for the and then I ended up really eventually on the way back being passed down on the way back to the commando in Northampton with the father's old barracks. That's what I told you.
The Northampton chairs, yeah.
When this RSM came up to me after a while and he said, Sergeant Moss. I said, yeah. He said, was your father called Dylan? Well, I told you, didn't I?
Yeah.
Well, I knew your father in India, he said. He must have been a young soldier then, you know.
Yeah.
He wasn't old then, he was only about 45 or something like that.
He'd probably seen you as a young lad then, hadn't he?
He might have done, I don't know. Yeah. He's the same regiment, 2nd Battalion Northampton. And this was the Northampton base depot, you know, the barracks.
Yeah.
Seemed a coincidence, didn't it?
It certainly does, doesn't it? Gosh.
You know, in the meantime, they put me on instructing troops for a while on various weapons. I think peculiar that, you know, after being aboard all that time and instructing troops.
Yeah.
And then we were in a room one day, and I'd instruct the chaps on the mortar sets, setting a mortar and things like that, you see.
Yeah.
And before, they'd been doing it on a board, so I thought you'd better off doing it outside with real targets, you know, so I took them outside. And it's much better, you know, they were able to assess the range and everything else, you know.
Yeah.
But, they say that went off very well, so. But I didn't like instructing much.
You didn't?
No. I was so eager to get back to a regular unit, you know.
Right.
Anyway, I saw plenty of excitement in Palestine. It's when I reported to DivHQ, I did the parachute course, you see, when we got there.
Was that at Aldershot?
Yeah. No, this was at Haifa.
Oh, really?
You were there then. They were stationed there then.
I was in Haifa for about 4 or 5 months. Yeah, just south of Haifa.
What about Carmel College? Did you go up there at all?
No, we went. No, some of us went up to Mount Carmel to see it, but I think I was working then. I used to work on the bananas.
Oh, you missed something up there, because when you get to the top of Mount Carmel, there's a whole of the slope sloping down towards Haifa and towards Syria as well.
Yeah.
It's huge slopes, and then at this certain time of year, all the grassy areas were smothered in wildflowers and anemones and things like that.
Right.
Marvellous sight. Right. I even did a sketch of it and sent it home to my mother. But it got lost in the meantime, you know.
No, I was on a kibbutz just by the sea, south of Haifa. There was a British cemetery just right next to the kibbutz.
Was that?
Yeah. Mm. But they hadn't looked after it at all. It made me quite cross, it did, because they didn't look after it.
Of course, there was Acre there, the old castle of Acre, further down the coast. You saw that.
Yeah.
Well, the SBS had their base depot there after the submarine was, after the Medway was sunk, you know.
Right.
When they came up into Syria. Was it Syria?
Yeah.
No, Palestine. That's right. They went to Palestine. They were in Syria for a while, but...
Lebanon.
They went to Palestine. Yeah. Lebanon, yeah.
Yeah. So you went out with them... How long did you do for the training course for the parachutes?
Well, I didn't do any training, so... Well, because I've done... four jumps with the SAS, you see.
Uh-huh.
So they wouldn't have you on, wouldn't send you on a patrol unless you'd done the jump. And as I told you, even Randall Churchill had to do a jump.
Right.
I never saw him do it, but I know he did it. But a couple of others there had to do it as well, you know. But when I got to the DivHQ, the colonel said, he said, the best thing I can give you, he says, considering your experience, he said, is put you in charge of the general escort. So he put me in charge of the general escort, a jeep and everything else. We had to work out various systems and things, you know. That's what I say, with going with the general to all the various trouble spots, I had a good opportunity of seeing everything.
So you're in Tel Aviv,
Jerusalem. You're in bad as people painted. There were a couple of atrocities, you know, with the terrorists and that sort of thing. And there were some nasty ones as well, but... And they say it wasn't as bad, and all that dangerous in that sense.
Yeah.
Except when the troops, as I told you, were shot in the tent that time.
Yeah.
The Welsh battalion ran amok, and they came up to the Jewish settlement just outside our place. They had DivHQ, the Peter Rath, and the Welsh regiment, was stationed a bit further down. Of course, it was their men who were shot, and they set out to. I don't know exactly what they were going to do, but they were going to attack this Jewish settlement.
Right.
And the Provost Major from the DivHQ had to go out. Of course, we had to go with him, and in our jeeps and everything else, the General had to go down as well. But the Provost Major handled it. He went down on his jeep, stood up in the jeep,